Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. So much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in. If you just tuned in, you missed our first hour with Dr. Troy. We get him on every month for the edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We actually spent the whole first hour of the show talking adrenal fatigue. If you're interested in that, signs, symptoms, preventative care, how to walk through that thing, take care of yourself so you can get some energy and life back, go back and catch the podcast. It'll be up a little bit after the live show. We're also on Facebook Live today. So we're saying, hey, and if you want to be on Facebook Live and post your questions there, go to the My Faith Radio, Faith Radio Facebook page, and we'll try to track with those questions. I know we get calls, we get emails, and I know some of you feel very impatient because we can't get to your question. I pray you will be patient because we always have more questions than we do have time. But even so, we're doing our best here to get to the questions that come in. So here's one from Sheila, and it says, any advice regarding restless leg syndrome? Have tried extra iron, ferritin levels okay, also magnesium supplements and magnesium soaks. They help a bit, but still waking up every 2 hours at night, sometimes unable to get back to sleep. I'm now experimenting with L-tryptophan and L-tyrosine. I think I'm saying that, and acidic foods tend to make it worse.
Yeah, so sounds like she's done her homework because iron and magnesium are very much a part of that, and those are the simple fixes as far as just getting, making sure you're getting enough of the enzymes and oxygen. And so that's a big part of it. Another scenario that we see with restless leg is lymphatic congestion. And so sometimes there can be food sensitivities or the liver is not able to pull the lymph out. And so if you have lymph that pools, then it's kind of like bathing your muscles in that lymphatic juice or acid. And so that can be a big problem. And if acidic foods make it worse, that tells us there could be some scenario where the upper digestive system is off a little bit. The stomach, gallbladder, and pancreas have to come together to make a properly balanced pH digestive juice, if you will, to break down proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. And if one of those scenarios is off, then it can start to lead to intestinal inflammation. One of the things we've talked about is a spasm around just to the right of the belly button and down in that valve. If that valve is stuck open all night long, then we start to reabsorb some of the foods or waste that we're supposed to be getting rid of, and that can lead to lymphatic swelling in the legs. Another component is a REM sleep disorder. So a lot of times these people have a stomach that's caught up in their diaphragm. We call it a functional hiatal hernia. They get stomach acid being released at the wrong time. It weakens the esophagus. Sometimes they're even diagnosed with GERD or something like that. And long story short, the airway and the digestive part, of the front part of the neck, become weak, and it collapses during REM or deep sleep. And we release adrenaline or cortisol in the middle of deep sleep. And so we start to act out our dreams. And so that's where a restless leg comes in.
Because the collapse happens and your body's trying to wake back up again?
Yeah, so you don't, you're in a deep sleep stage. You don't wake up out of that deep sleep per se, but you start to actually, it pulls you from stage four to stage three, but you're still having the dreams. So if you remember your dreams and then you wake up shortly afterwards and you notice the sheets and everything all over the place from the restless leg, most likely that's a sleep disorder. Now, one other thing that can cause it is reactive hypoglycemia. And with that, you generally have to look at blood work. They'll look at your hemoglobin A1C, and if it's just the high end of normal and your blood sugar is low, below 80, we're going to call that low, not functional hypoglycemia or not hypoglycemic range, but functionally. So it'll be somewhere between 60 and 80. So if your hemoglobin A1C is a little high and the blood sugar is a little low, and then your carbon dioxide reading on the lab test is also low, that's a general sign of reactive hypoglycemia, where you're not actually balancing your sugar properly. Hmm. And so that's more of a blood sugar regulation issue, which the whole adrenal conversation can be a part of that.
I read somewhere, you need to correct all the stuff that I read, but this was interesting to me, and I don't know if it was related to the adrenal fatigue or not, but those who wake up like between 2 and 4 at night oftentimes has this blood sugar issue where, because everything's so low, that their blood sugar goes low, and they say a simple remedy is a couple bites of protein right before you go to bed, like a cracker, a piece of, you know, wheat cracker with some peanut butter. Is that?
Yeah, that's very true, actually. Yeah, and so I like
that.
Yeah, that was very true.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Susie, you are right.
Thank you. Anyway.
And I like to have like chicken strips or something like that too. Mm. And some people in the past have even had whole fruit and like an apple, something like that. But a blood sugar balancing snack right before bed will serve a lot of people.
Wow.
And so it has to be a food you don't react to. And it does have to not spike your blood sugar. So it's got to give a little bit more of a sustained release. So sometimes we'll use just a little bit of a low glycemic shake or an apple. Or one of my favorites is to have people just do little chicken strips. You just have a breast of chicken, cut it up, and over 2 nights you can have just a little protein
snack.
Couple
bites, so not a lot.
It's not a lot. You don't need a lot.
And how does a person know if they need that? Basically, if they're waking up around that same time?
If they're waking up same time, every time. That's one of the factors. Now, during the day, the next day, it's important to incorporate a little bit of exercise consistently. Not a lot, not high intensity, but consistent. And then proper meals, whatever it is, just consistently eating at the times, paying attention to when you're getting that low. So some people do best with fasting. They actually do better to not eat breakfast, eat between 11
wow.
and 7, two meals, and just eat those two meals. Other people need to eat every 3 hours.
Hmm.
And so you have to figure out which person you are with
that. Interesting.
Yeah. So it's one of those scenarios where some people, you have to manage it just very differently. Your lifestyle, stress, your body type will all play into that.
Well, let's talk about food that people react to. Is gluten bad for everybody, or is it just a very common? Because in some ways, it seems like a trendy thing for some. I'm gluten free. I'm like, when you say gluten free, do you curl up in the fetal position if you've had it? Because that's how gluten free I am. But it's not for everybody, or is it?
No, it's not for everybody. So some people will be able to handle gluten. Gluten is a very heavy protein. The real challenge is that we've actually changed our wheat here in the United States. So it's not how God made it. It's not natural, basically. And when they've done that, there's a certain percentage of the population that just cannot tolerate it. I have a lot of people who are gluten-free here in the United States, travel over to Europe, and they can handle the gluten over there.
Wow.
Yeah. So
we've wrecked our gluten?
We've wrecked our gluten.
Wow.
Now, some people just can't handle gluten at all.
Hmm.
Those are true celiac patients, and they have an autoimmune disorder. They can't handle the gluten over in Italy or the gluten here. But a lot of people, a high percentage, can just not tolerate it all that well, or it's hard to digest. And if you keep things really clean, they can get away with one gluten meal a week, something like that, or every 3 days.
Hmm.
So there's a scale to that. True celiacs is the worst you can get, where you just can't even be around people who have eaten gluten.
Yeah, like my brother can't lick the envelope because there's gluten on the glue, you know
yes.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but if someone's got some kind of gut inflammation, would the first places they turn, maybe just for experiment, would be gluten, dairy, soy, or are there other, corn, I think?
Yeah, those are the top four.
Well,
man, she nailed it.
Unbelievable.
Why am I here?
Because that's as far as it goes, I'm telling you that much. Okay, let's see if we got another one here. This dear friend, I think, needs to go to the doctor, but I'll read this and let you decide because you're the doc. I've been having some sharp, dull heart pain. Feels like I have food stuck in my esophagus, but there's no food. Hard to breathe, and every time I take a breath, it feels like someone is breath in, it feels like someone's squeezing my heart. I've been under high stress and in constant go mode. It's been 2 days now, pain nonstop. Should I see my doctor or just slow down and take it easy?
Well, for something like that, you don't fool around. So, go and see the doctor and make sure you're not having a heart attack, heart conditions. And it's one of those things where if everything comes back clear, then you can move on the other stuff, which would be manage the stress, the lifestyle. That is the scenario we do see with people. If it's stress-induced and the heart is fine, then that is the scenario we do see where the stomach gets caught up, starts to affect the tension in the esophagus, and you have that sensation of a full food going down the throat when really it's just an increased
spasm
tension.
Kind of a thing.
So that could 100% be stress or tension, but you don't fool around with that. So so that's why our urgent care centers and emergency rooms are there. And they, the worst thing that you're going to hear is you're fine because you don't, you didn't have a heart attack. So if that's the case, take this as an early sign that things are out of balance, and resetting your lifestyle, managing the stress is the first step. And if everything relaxes after a couple good sleeps and you're good, you know it was the stress.
Boy, that's so good. Truly, and you ask God for wisdom too. I mean, I read this story about this pastor's wife who learned she had adrenal fatigue, and she said, I'm going to go to the doctor. I'm going to get everything worked out here. But God, what do you want me to do? And he said, worship and laugh. And so she watched a bunch of Andy Griffith shows and just laughed her guts out. But truly, laughter is good for the soul.
100%.
Worship is good
yes.
for the soul.
Yep.
I mean, God will give you wisdom and tell you what to do. When we come back, Haley writes in, a question for Dr. Troy. I'm a long-term chronic migraine sufferer. Been on preventative care, Topamax, for years. Use between 2 to 6 Imitrex migraine relief medication per week as needed. Our 6-year-old son has been complaining his head is sore. I fear he's inherited this disease, as I most likely did from my grandmother and my sister, who suffers as I do. Question is, should I be getting our son on some preventative care? Actually, it's a 2-part question. Is there a long-term detrimental effect on me by taking all of this medication? Got your work cut out for you, Dr. Troy.
Oh boy.
All right. You can email me those questions, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Try to post them on Facebook, too, and I'll try to keep an eye on those as well. Don't go away. More when we return. For tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, and we always talk, I should say, we talk every day about deeper life in Christ, powerful life on earth, and then we kind of behind the scenes call this the no fluff zone. We like to tackle the deeper issues of the faith, but you know what? Our faith, our physical health is very connected to our spiritual health, very connected. Our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit. This is why we have Dr. Troy on every single month, and we call it Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We try our best to answer your questions, and I do know some of you get frustrated if I can't get to your question. You got to trust me on this. We pray before every show, ask God to help us answer as many questions as we can. We're just people, right? We have our limits.
Definitely.
We can only answer so many, and we're doing our best. So please be patient and hang in there with us if you would. Haley writes in and says, I'm a long-term chronic migraine sufferer, been on preventative care, Topamax for years, use between 2 to 6 Imitrex migraine relief per week as needed. Our 6-year-old son has been complaining his head is sore. I fear he has inherited the disease, as I most likely did from my grandmother, as did my sister. My question is, should I be getting our son on some preventative care? And actually, the second part is there a long-term detrimental effect on me by taking all this medication?
That's a very good question, very loaded question, too. So what I'm going to do is say, number one, when it comes to any advice I give here, make sure you're working with your doctor when it comes to changing any medications. I can't and don't want you to alter anything based on what I say here. Just look into it. Having said that, I go down a different path completely when it comes to migraines. And what I mean by that is, generally speaking, I don't think there's a genetic component to migraines per se. And what I mean by that is you can have some genetic potential, and it usually has to do with a liver dysfunction, so the problems in the liver. So here's my challenge with a lot of the medications that are used, because they do help potentially manage it. We do know that if you're on one medication, this is from some studies that showed us, if you're on one medication, there's a 10% chance of a side effect. If you're on two medications, there's a 50% chance of a side effect. Three or more, there's a 100% chance of a side effect. So
wow.
To answer the question of potential long-term effects, the answer is yes. However, there is, in the last 20 years, there's a handful, 2 or 3 people where we had to keep them on their medications because that's all that worked for them. The majority, though, once we identify what is going on and the underlying what set this up, there's a lot that can be done. And so there are many triggers to migraines. So I'm going to walk through just a couple of them. Number one, like I said, the liver and its inability to actually detoxify properly can lead to what's called a visceral somatic reflex. And what that means is it's kind of like when someone has a heart attack, they'll feel pain down their left arm. I can treat the left arm all I want. The real problem is the heart. Mm. When someone has a liver dysfunction, it can lead to headaches, not with everyone, but with certain individuals. And also when someone has a digestive, lower right digestive inflammatory disorder, it can cause tension on the right side of the neck, which when we rotate that occiput, the nerves associated with our blood flow to our brain are altered and affected by that. It's kind of like if I'm going to flex my muscle, you can't see this, but pretend there's a big muscle here. Yeah. Pretend you're flexing a muscle. Mm. My brain is sending the signal to contract that muscle, but it's also sending a signal to the arteries for more blood flow. Mm. And so when we alter the tone or tension of our neck muscles with our head, it alters blood flow to that area as well. So the nerve function changes, and that can trigger headaches, especially long term. So digestive inflammation is the number one cause of headaches or head pain with kids because it's altered their actual muscle tone in the neck and then up into the head. And hormone dysfunction is one of the things that can also trigger migraines. Sensitivities to foods can trigger migraines. Chocolate, unfortunately, is one of the big ones. And there's chemical responses that are involved with that. So managing the intestinal inflammation, reaction to foods, and any other thing that might be affecting the liver, hormones are the number one. So a lot of times, women in particular, when they're young women or teenagers, when they start to go through the beginning stages of menses, that's when the migraines start to happen. That's almost always a sign that the hormones are part of the actual migraines. A lot of people with gluten sensitivities also can get migraines. So the reality is finding out what's causing the intestinal inflammation, the hormone imbalance, the physical imbalance, because one of the other triggers, and there's no genetic component to this, but jaw dysfunction. So people who have jaw dysfunction can trigger headaches and migraines. Same type of scenario where those nerves are affected, impacting the vasculature to the area. And you can get migraines from not having enough oxygen all the way to not enough blood sugar or actually just nerves misfiring because of imbalance. So there's always one of those scenarios that, involved. I'm going to say almost always, because there's a few cases where we were unable to determine what was ultimately triggering the migraine. But the majority of the people, if you correct those underlying issues with the liver, digestive inflammation, and structurally help balance the head, neck, and jaw, then that usually takes care of it. And kids getting head pain, almost always digestive if they're pre-puberty.
And so what would be some steps that she could take for her child then? Pull out the gluten,
pull
dairy.
Pull out the gluten, dairy, yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. Pull out the foods, inflammatory mm-hmm. foods, chocolate, gluten. So the order for migraines is a little different than the one we mm-hmm. had before. Chocolate's actually number one. Gluten's number two. And then it goes to sugar, number three. Then corn, then dairy.
Interesting. Wow. I think I've used up my word interesting. My quota. I've used it up too much. Okay. We might have to, let's see, we got time, I think, for this one. Linda says, brother was in Vietnam and was exposed to Agent Orange. Now he has trouble with balance when he's walking or standing. What say you?
The area of the brain that gets, and we actually see this a lot. So it's very, very unfortunate. And it, not only is it Agent Orange, but it's other things we're exposed to. But there is a component, an area of the brain that deals with our balance, it deals with muscle memory, our emotional memory, that gets impacted by this. And we tend to actually create antibodies against this area of the brain, and so the cerebellum in particular. And so what we see is it's harder to learn new things because that has to go through that area of the brain. Balance becomes an issue. The only thing you can do is start to help manage, to treat it like an autoimmune disease at this point, where you make sure your vitamin D levels are high, your fish oils are high, and your antioxidants are high and consumed daily, and then work on strengthening that area of the brain. If you start to work on core exercises, that will help the cerebellum.
Wow.
So 10 minutes of core exercises really stimulates that area of the brain. Now, if they can handle it, so which makes sense. I mean, you're having trouble with the vertigo and spinning and stuff, but balancing on one foot is part of core exercise. But if you can't balance yet, there are other exercises you can do where you're laying on your back that start to exercise your core. Then when your core becomes strong enough, just the act of walking will stimulate that area of the brain.
Interesting.
Eye exercises will help with that area of the brain. So it's really about exercising your cerebellum. Inactivity is one of the worst things you can do. And the problem is these people start to have challenges with the cerebellum, and we see a significant number of them turn to alcohol because alcohol is a GABA agonist, and GABA is the main brain chemical for that area of the brain. So they try.
So they almost crave it?
They crave it.
Wow.
They just do. I'd be surprised if this person didn't have some level of craving that. And if you read, there's a lot of literature about people coming back from Vietnam just traumatized, and then they came back here and were traumatized by our reaction to them being in Vietnam, and they were exposed to all these chemicals. So it is a horrible scenario. We need to pray for these people.
Amen.
We need to lift them up and support them in any way we can.
Amen.
I mean, I tear up thinking about the cross they've had to bear.
Indeed.
And what they're dealing with.
Wow.
And so these people in particular have just been exposed to way too much, and they've been handcuffed with what they are now left with as far as dealing and working in our world right now, our reality. So very, very important to help the cerebellum. Cerebellar exercises are crucial for anyone experiencing Agent Orange.
Well, God bless you, Linda, and your dear brother. It makes me think of the Wall Angels. We've talked about this, but that would be a good core exercises,
yes, it
right?
Would. Yes.
So, Linda,
support.
Troy's going to go up against the wall. No, I'm kidding.
Yes.
I wish I could show you. But yeah, you just picture yourself up against the wall, and your back will, you know, tends to arch. So push it up against the wall so you're flat. I should let him explain it, but then your arms are. Right. Why don't you just talk about it?
Oh, you're doing great, Susie.
We're on Facebook Live for those of you who are listening by radio. So we're trying to show people what it looks like.
And
so
basically, everything's just flat against the wall. But to help with the core, your heels against the wall, your butts against the wall, shoulder blades and head. And you're just doing a little angel movement. You keep your elbows at 90 degrees and you're up against the wall, pushing everything into the wall. But the trick is for the core, you got to tilt your pelvis. So you pull your belly button in and back and hold it there. And you'll find out how weak the core is, because some people can't even get it into position and some people can only hold it for 1 or 2 seconds. So you hold it there as you go through that motion. And what it does is, especially when your arms are up in the air, it starts to strengthen and exercise that core, but you've got the stability of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And another great one is just lying on your back and doing leg lifts to help with that until you can get to balancing exercise. When you do a forward lunge with your arms up in the air and just try and balance with that, that helps the core as well. Anything
Amazing.
With the arms up above your head or above your shoulders while you're balancing helps the core.
Indeed. Wow, we're going to pause here. When we come back, Chris has a question. Diagnosed with binocular vision disorder, difficult to focus for more than 10 minutes, was in a car accident 25 years ago. Any underlying medical reasons that could be causing this? And I got a few others here that I got to work my way through, but we love it. So keep the emails coming. Susie@myfaithradio.com or post your question on Facebook, and I'll check that here in a moment as well. Back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Always, always honored to have you listening. I know this monthly feature that we do is one of your favorites because you tell me so. It is Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We're honored to have him in studio. If you're listening online on your Faith Radio app, live streaming from around the world, I would love to know where you're listening from. Susie@myfaithradio.com. But also want you to know we are on Facebook Live. So if you're on Facebook, go to the Faith Radio Facebook page and you get to see Dr. Troy. Maybe you thought he was 7 feet tall with jet black hair. Well, you were wrong. Sorry, just had to say that.
Definitely not 7 feet.
Okay, so this dear listener says it wants to talk about the negative health effects of EMF energy or non-ionized energy, like from cell phones, Wi-Fi, smart meters, cell towers. He says, what's your experience with affected individuals with debilitating sensitivities to excessive cell phone use over the past 30 years? He said this is his experience. His GP doc in Duluth is a non-believer in such things. However, he said, I've proven to myself and others who experience the same symptoms, whom I've worked with at the same company for 20 years, tinnitus, bloodshot eyes, tingling hands when Wi-Fi is actively streaming while at home, slow to no healing from eczema, neck and facial muscle tension, confusion after longer I have to take the cell phone calls. He's only in speaker mode now. Just wondering. Wow.
Yeah, it's a real thing. So EMF stands for electromagnetic frequencies. And the reality is we have toxins in this world right now. So we have a lot of chemicals, 1,100 new chemicals every year released into our environment. And I know it's a big number.
Wow.
Total, we're probably up to about 85,000 chemicals since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, and we don't know what a lot of those chemicals are doing to us. At one point, DDT was considered okay until they found out, it really does get
that
out of
our environment.
What's DDT? It was used on farm fields back in the day, and it's one of the most potent cancer-causing agents, and it was sprayed on our food in the 50s. And so it's one of those things where they've banned it now everywhere except for China, and it's caused a lot of disruption, but there's 1,100 chemicals every year. And so that level of pollution is easy to understand. But the reality is we've now entered a world where we have EMFs, electromagnetic frequency. And for the caller, I would say, number one, have the doctor, if you're trying to convince the doctor, you can just look up the research on living under power lines and leukemia. So there's significant research that actually shows your incidence of leukemia increases if you live too close to power lines. It's been acknowledged, actually. So electromagnetic frequencies, every time we have an electric current, there's the current that travels through the wire, but around it is what we call an EMF, electromagnetic frequency. And it'll go out anywhere from, like your fridge has an EMF frequency out about 6 inches, the microwave out about 12 to 14 inches. Those big power lines could be 20, 30 feet.
Wow.
So people who are living on homes where they had power lines underneath their home or wires above their head had a higher incidence of leukemia. And so we know there is a challenge because now building code basically states you have to have these filters around the wires to buffer that scenario. So we had a patient who had migraine headaches and we couldn't find out what it was. And we checked them for EMF, and sure enough, there was a reaction to the frequencies. And when you see that, we asked her, okay, what is going on? Turns out she was living in an older house that had the power lines on the outside of the house. Her bed was right up against that. And so when she actually went in and we had her measure with a gauze meter, you can pick it up at Home Depot, it'll measure your EMFs in your home and house. And so with that, we could actually measure that the EMFs coming late, she was basically sleeping in this EMF field, migraines.
Wow.
So we had her move her bed to the other side of the room, and the migraines went away. And eventually she got the wires fixed and stuff as well. But now new building code, they don't even allow that. So that's a good thing. So EMF is a very real thing. We see a lot of pilots and a lot of people working in airplanes because you're basically in a big metal tube with wires all around you. And I will say the things that you can do, they do now have different devices that you can put in your home to disperse the EMF frequencies. They protect. Just make sure it's a legitimate company that's doing it. And we see a lot of problems with cranial dysfunction. So a cranial sacral therapist can actually help quite a bit with the consequences of EMF. So that's basically working on the head, the nerves and muscles of the head itself, because they get affected quite a bit. There's some interesting things online if you want to look at some YouTube videos of people basically popping popcorn with their cell phones. They put three cell phones together and they can actually pop the popcorn there. I've never tried it, so I don't know if it's real, but why don't you guys try that at home and let
exactly.
me know next time.
But so on a practical level, though, you really shouldn't stand in front of your microwave waiting
Correct.
For your popcorn, right?
Yes. Yep. Your mom was right. Don't sit so close to the TV.
Yeah. Your face will stay that way.
Yes,
not
that's
really,
right.
but seriously.
Yes.
Okay. How about with plugging your cell phone into your nightstand next to your bed.
Yeah, not a good idea. Yeah.
Really?
And so it's one of those things where now everyone's different. Some of us can handle it, but we're electric. Our bodies are electric and electric currents can offset each other. And so EMFs can disrupt the electrons in our ourselves, basically. So certain people are more sensitive than others. So we know that. I do see that people who have cranial dysfunction tend to be a lot more sensitive. When you actually detoxify and balance that, you can become less reactive to EMFs.
So how do you detoxify and get a balance back? And especially, I mean, does it come from computers as well? Or just...
Oh, yeah, anything electric. Anything with electric current has that potential. So if you want to just measure it, you get a gauze meter and you'll be able to see from outlets when something is – when you put it up against an outlet, it might not show anything. But when you turn the light on that's associated with that outlet, all of a sudden you'll see EMFs out to about 6 inches.
So we are constantly exposed to these frequencies.
We're being bombarded and we don't know, yeah.
And so do I need a bubble suit?
Yes.
really? We're going to sell them online. I'm just kidding.
Yes.
So how do you detoxify and get balanced then if this is your constant exposure?
Well, it's the same as other toxins. So we basically are filters. So we're filters for the chemicals in our environment and the energy in our environment too. And so the healthier you are, the more vibrant your cells are working and the better your energy. Less impactful you're going to get EMF. So if you're exposed to it on a daily basis, that wears you down, like pilots and flight attendants and stuff like that. And I think there's I've seen a lot of captains, and this is just a theory, so don't take this to the bank, but I see a lot of captains in the airlines and they all seem to have white or gray hair prematurely. And I think it's because of the stress of their sleep, how they have to perform all hours of the night, and it's from EMFs. That's what I think.
So he mentioned some of the symptoms that he's dealt with. Tinnitus, that's the ringing in the ears. Is that right?
That's correct.
Bloodshot eyes, tingling in hands when Wi-Fi is streaming. Any other neck tension, facial muscle tension, any other things he didn't mention that would be symptomatic of this?
Yeah, that's a common one for someone with cranial deficiencies, but it can actually manifest in many different ways. That's why it's so hard to detect. And so we will actually use electric currents from cell phones and hair dryers. That's actually, we call it our MacGyver test in the clinic to see how reactive people are to those things, cell phones when they're on and hair dryers. But you never know. There's nothing consistent, which is one of the reasons why it gets ignored completely, because it's hard to measure in people.
But how would it not have consequence? And so,
exactly.
So you're saying we detox then by having healthy cells. It reminds me, Kev always says that the best way to have a healthy lawn, you know, and not have weeds is to contribute to the health of the lawn, because
that
chokes.
Correct.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Is that kind of the truth then with?
That's the truth. We want to avoid as best we can, but even when we can't, you want to be as healthy as you possibly can.
Okay. And you've talked about this, just sticking with the whole antioxidant thing. There are levels of antioxidants, and if you're not maybe currently taking them, you maybe don't have a healthy diet, to go to college level, so to speak, you know, you've kind of measured it that way, it would actually be really hard on your system. Is that right? I mean, it's maybe I'm misunderstanding that, but do you have to kind of acquire an ability to ingest a really good antioxidant?
Yeah, definitely. Because in the beginning, it's like if you get a really good antioxidant in supplement form, it can be like eating 10 heads of broccoli for you. Someone who's not used to eating vegetables or broccoli, you have to have receptors and enzymes that break that down in the body. And so you can be bloated and very gaseous from eating broccoli until you get used to it. So there's a system and a process that you have to retrain your body. It just doesn't happen overnight. So it's something to, when you've been unhealthy, even if you've been healthy, but there's one thing you identify that maybe has been unhealthy in you for 10, 15, 20 years, there's generally a process you have to go through to retrain your body.
Interesting. One more quick question regarding that, because Mike asked this last time and we couldn't get to it. The quality of vitamins was mentioned on the show within the last 2 months or so. You talked about a research list of 100 different brands and what quality brand was. Where can I find the list? I don't know that we talked about a list, but I know a number of people asked
about.
Yeah. Oh, there is a book.
Yeah, there's
oh,
a
okay.
book. If you go to Barnes & Noble or Amazon, it's called the Nutritive Comparative Guide. And so the author's name is Lyle McWilliams. And what he did is he took 1,500, actually, in the newest edition, 1,500 different multiples and broke them down to look at bioavailability and what's on the label is in the bottle. And because it's an unregulated field, it becomes very hard to determine what's good and what's not. And it used to be, there was a time when I could say to my patients, generally, if it's expensive, it's usually good. But what happened is, these brilliant marketers found that out, and they started just raising their price and selling more. because there was within the alternative and functional medicine world a movement of recognizing the quality stuff was just more expensive. Mm-hmm. So get the quality stuff.
Wow.
But now you can't do that. So this is a very good book to help identify quality nutrients.
Give us that title again.
The Nutritive Comparative Guide. It's okay. Either the Nutritive Comparative Guide or Nutrition Comparative Guide.
And maybe Aaron can look that up on Amazon and link it on our show page. That'd be fantastic. We also received a number of questions because when we were on that topic, you mentioned one of your favorites is USANA. Yeah. Am I saying that right?
That's right.
USANA. U.S. And tell us why you love USANA so much.
Well, just the company. They're a company that I can trust. So they have a pharmaceutical-grade supplement. The actual facility is an FDA-regulated facility. So if today the government said you have to regulate supplements like drugs are regulated, it's the only company that I know of that would be okay. Nothing would change. So when I have a professional Olympic athlete, they have a guarantee that the athlete will not test positive to a banned substance. And I don't know of any other company that has that guarantee. They have a $1 million guarantee. So if this Olympic athlete tests positive and they lose their gold medal and it's found to be because of contamination, then they will pay that athlete $1 million. They've had it for 10 years and they've never paid it out because they know it's clean because they check it like the pharmaceutical industry checks their medications. To have that in the nutrition world for me making recommendations to people is a lifesaver. I wish they had more products because they don't carry something for everything. But for me, I look at the nutrition world and I know they've got this guarantee. So I look at other companies. I've not found one yet that has a $1 million guarantee, and it's been 10 years. So that I ask the question, why is that? And the answer is because they can't. They've not set themselves up properly. I was given the opportunity to actually go tour the manufacturing facility where it's all made, and you can't even walk into the room where the supplements are. It's pharmaceutical grade air. We can't breathe into the room for contamination issues. So you have to wear like a spacesuit and a mask and everything, and they vacuum seal the supplements up to the next floor to bottle them, and then they vacuum them up again to another floor where the cardboard boxes are to put them in the boxes because they found that the fibers from the cardboard was enough to contaminate the products too. So they just go to a different level.
Wow. Well, well said. That's great. Great. We've got a bunch of emails coming in. I'm going to grab some of those if I can as well. It's Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Also, I think we're still on Facebook. I'm pretty sure. So go ahead and jump on Facebook and give us a shout out and ask a question there. And we'll try to cover that as well. We'll be back in a moment. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, and it's this month's edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Wow, where have the 2 hours gone? We've got one segment left, and again, more questions than we do time, but we're doing our best here, so hang with us, friends. This dear listener, John, says, this guy is awesome, he says in all caps. Any thoughts on a lack of focus or concentration?
Yes, we have an epidemic of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of things that can contribute to that. So, the number one cause I'd say with our kids is a blood sugar issue. So if our brain doesn't get enough oxygen or sugar, that's going to cause a lack of focus, and attention. We actually can get mentally fatigued very quickly. The other things that can cause that are intestinal inflammatory disorders. They call our digestive system the second brain for a reason. When you have a cold or flu, think about how easy it is to focus and do extra work. You just can't do it. And so it is very important to actually keep your digestive system clean. Now, the interesting side of that coin is there are times in our life where we're hyper-focused. And so there's some very interesting studies that have shown from court documents, like police officers, when they're in an adrenaline state and they're in a mode where they're firing bullets. And there's one book in particular where I read about a police officer, and he was able to account for every shot he fired and where it went into the wall and where the bullets went and the ones that were coming at him. He was able to actually discern and in detail describe the events that happened in a matter of seconds, but he was able to see it. He said it was like everything just slowed down. And what they've shown and proven is that when we're in a state of adrenaline with the proper heart rate and in a certain mind, adrenaline will focus us to a certain degree. And if our blood sugar, our insulin, and our cortisol and adrenaline are all balanced, we can become hyper-focused and life slows down.
Interesting.
Same thing with professional athletes when they talk about how the game slows down for them. And for us, when we are on purpose, when we have a healthy lifestyle and we're on purpose, we can experience that as well. We can become hyper-focused. Where people do the unhealthy version is the first time I had a cup of coffee, I was in my 40s. I was in my early 40s. It was the first cup of coffee I ever had in my life. My wife talked me into it. And and it was great. I had this hyper-focus.
Yeah.
Well, eventually I lost that with coffee. And so for about 2 hours, though, I was just kind of focused, like hyper. And I thought, oh, this is why everyone loves it so much. And so I recognized soon, though, that that was very, very fleeting. And so people will get that from caffeine because it will stimulate the adrenals to release adrenaline and we can get hyper-focused. But when you are on purpose and you're passionate about what you're doing in life, you can, in a healthy way, release sustainable amounts of this adrenaline because of excitement, but also have the healthy metabolism and chemistry to maintain it.
Mm.
And that's why people can maintain that focus. So your healthy lifestyle can become very important for focus and do it without the crash consequence of an adrenaline rush. And so it's very, very much there's an art to that. And what we're talking about with the whole lifestyle component is very much applicable to this conversation. All the things that interfere with that healthy lifestyle, the inflammation from sugar and food colorings and food additives, intestinal inflammation, infections, how we've changed and altered our food supply, all of that stuff starts to interfere with that. And from a brain perspective, most of our brain is inhibitory by nature. And so when we start to lose brain function because we're not taking care of our brain, we lose the ability to focus and we lose the ability to hold our attention. And we're seeing that that is increasing now more than ever because unhealthy adults are having unhealthy children. Unhealthy babies right out of the get-go. And there's an interesting study from many years ago called the Pottinger Cat Study. And it came from San Francisco, and they had just an excess amount of cats. So what they did is they fed the cats a raw food cat diet that's normal and good for them, and then they fed them processed food that we humans were eating. And within three generations, the cats that were fed the processed food became sterile, couldn't have babies anymore, blind, diabetic, arthritic, and they were almost a third less the size of the other healthy cats. And so that's what we're doing to ourselves, just we're bigger people and more complex. It's just taking longer than three generations.
Oh, that's absolutely amazing. And one of our other past guests, I think it was Laura Harris, said that processed foods is the new cocaine. I mean, she feels that strongly about it. That
yes.
It is. You agree?
I agree. Yeah, 100%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And what they give you for attention and focus, the medications, is equivalent to cocaine. That's what it does. It helps you hyper-focus. Cocaine's what it does to our brain is it helps us hyper-focus. So that's one of the medications they actually give. It's in the same family.
Mm. And as you say, though, the impact is fleeting, and then it's not sustainable, and it's not contributing to your overall health. And I think
Correct. That's
worth really thinking about, that because we're a symptom-treating kind of society, when you think of forward, okay, this just gets me through the moment, and that is what we do, is it contributing to my overall health, to my chemical, my physical, my emotional, my spiritual? Maybe that's a good question to ask before we are quick to treat symptoms.
Yeah, we have to check in. It's like those impulse buys that you get, the chocolate bar at the checkout line, or the impulse buys that you don't think about, And then you feel the negative effects of that later. And we buy it because in that moment we need something. Mm. And then we take it and we do get something from it and then it's gone again. And so then we have regret about that impulse buy because it really didn't serve our needs long term.
It cost us more than it gave.
And it cost us more than it gave us.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay. We're going to tackle this particular question. Let's see here. From Chris. Chrissy, I call her because she's my relative. She's actually my sister. Hope it's okay, Chrissy. It's out of the bag now. But she was in a pretty bad car accident about 25 years ago. And I didn't, when she talks about this disorder, I didn't know this was what it was, but I know that she lives daily with headaches and neck pain and that kind of thing. Diagnosed with binocular vision disorder, difficult to focus more than 10 minutes. I think it's eyes, head, everything. And she loves to read, but it's a daily issue for her. What say you?
Well, there's an area of the brain that is very much involved with that. And when you look in at something in front of you, we have to accommodate. So the eyes have to accommodate. And so that there are nerves that have to be firing consistently. And when there's been an accident or trauma, there can be dysfunction. The same thing happens with people with concussions. And so it's very important that all information as it comes in from our receptors, whether it be through receptors in the ears, eyes, taste buds, or through our body, it's important that they go through these areas of integration and then keep communicating. When there's trauma like that, there can be a breakdown in communication. So the only thing you can do, there's a couple general principles. Number one, to decrease the fatigue, you can alter the frequency of the light. So if you wear lenses or you put lenses over your glasses to alter the light so it's more of a different hue, like a pink hue or something like that, that can actually give you more endurance. If you block some of the components of the screens, if you're reading a computer, that can give you more endurance. I'm also going to make a recommendation because she's local. There is a doctor locally. There's a couple of them, but functional chiropractic neurologist, Dr. Jeremy Schmo, that does amazing work with eye function, can measure the imbalances and test if functional exercises will actually work. To help strengthen that area. Now, sometimes, especially after 2 years duration, there's nothing we can do. Sometimes, though, we find that the nerves are still firing. They're just very weak. If they're firing but very weak, eye exercises can actually start to occur. One of the other things is when you go out in public, outside, I should say, not necessarily in public, but the sun is shining, many of us will put glasses on because it's irritating to the eyes. Well, sometimes it's better to actually take the glasses off momentarily and exercise our eyes, the dilation of the pupils. So our nerves in the brain in that area are just like muscles. They need to be exercised. And if they're getting enough oxygen and blood sugar, then they can strengthen. So you need to go to someone who can assess and test that. And he's particular. I refer a lot of my patients that have those types of scenarios to Dr. Schmo.
Mm. Chrissy, I'll make sure you get that information. We've got just a couple minutes left. Let me just see if I can get this question in from Steve. Whey protein isolate. A while back, I was listening to your show with Dr. Troy. He recommended a whey protein isolate to use as a supplement. I was in my car, couldn't write it down. Do you happen to remember the name of that product?
Ooh. No, there's a bunch of companies that have it. USANA, that we mentioned before, has a whey protein isolate. We've also used the one from Metagenics and Zymogen. Those are three companies I know have good whey protein isolate. I just want to make sure if you're getting whey protein isolate, that's from a clean source. Mm. So you have to be very, very discerning with that because there's a lot of protein isolates in particular where they don't really care what else is in there.
And that's...
We don't know. That's the
problem.
We don't know which ones they are because we don't test them.
Wow. Well, this went by so fast. Dr. Troy, you are, I know, an incredibly busy man that you would give us this time. Thank you so very much.
I love coming here.
We love having you. And we're going to put up his clinic website on our show page. I know I'll get emails about that, but it's right there on Live the Promise page, okay? You've been listening to Live the Promise, and in just a little bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program on our website at myfaithradio.com. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.